And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop, the only live political talk show in the D.C. area that allows you to join the debate. I'm your host. I'm Mark Levine. I have a radio show called The Inside Scoop, which is being simulcast along with this television show. I used to work as a Democrat for Congress as an attorney on the House Judiciary and House Homeland Security Committees. My guest is Michael Lane. He is a Republican. He is the president of Intelligence Strategies, and it is his job to try to get Republicans elected to public office. Mike, welcome again to
Mark,
The Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me back. Again, a pleasure. Thank you.
Mike and I don't agree on much, but what we do agree on is the necessity of having live public debate, and for that, I'm always grateful for you to come on the air.
Let's have it.
All right. Well, there's a lot of news this week, a lot of stuff going on. North Korea is launching missiles. Israel's invading Gaza. Mexico has a disputed election that looks a lot like our election in 2000. Meanwhile, according to the Washington Post today, the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and Ken Lay, that dastardly CEO of Enron, who was convicted of basically stealing a lot of people's money, died and may escape restitution because of it. I want to talk about that later on. And of course, Congress, at least 2 weeks ago, was worried mostly about flag burning. But I want to talk about something else to start.
Right.
And folks, you can join in, raise any of those issues or any issue of your own just by calling in. But I want to start with all last week. The Republicans were bashing the New York Times. Now, I know that is a common practice among Republicans. They love to get together and, you know, tar and feather the New York Times and put up effigies and burn them. I understand that. That's part of what you do. But the anger, it seems, directed the New York Times was quite severe. And, of course, it's because the New York Times told the public about some secret Bush administration practices that were done without approval by Congress or the courts, basically spying on us, checking all our phone bills, checking our bank records, and so forth. And the anger was so severe that one conservative columnist said something about executive editor Bill Keller going to the gas chamber. Now, that's a pretty severe response. I don't remember them saying that about Bob Novak when he added the CIA agent. But here's what I'm trying to understand here. If all of this is worthwhile to protect us from terrorists, the Bush administration insists that all these constitutional niceties like Fourth Amendment protecting against searches and seizures, Sixth Amendment right to counsel, that all that has to be thrown out the window to protect us from the war on terror. If all of this is necessary, why can't the president make his case to the American people, go to Congress, get a law passed, if it's secret, go to the secret courts, use the law we have already established, instead of going out on his own and then blaming the New York Times for reporting it?
Well, you know, first of all, the president didn't blame the New York Times, but admittedly there was a lot of harsh and heated language about what the Times did.
I thought a spokesperson blamed the New York Times.
Well, Tony Snow definitely called them up short for what they did, and they deserve to be called up short for what they did. I mean, it was absolutely atrocious. The kind of secrets that they let out, talking about the way, not the fact that we were tracking financial transactions of terror groups, but the methodology that we used to track those transactions gave the terrorists a heads up as to how to change what they're doing to make it that much more difficult for us to track them. And they deserve to be brought up short for that. No less a figure than John Murtha actually called up the New York Times and said, look, please don't do this. This is very, very important to our war on terror. You're letting out secrets that just shouldn't be let out. Now, okay, the New York Times is very easy to bash. They're a shadow of their former self. They're no longer the paper of record. They are now a laughable joke. They've been a laughable joke since long before Jason Blair embarrassed them and created so much difficulty for them. But the once proud paper of record is no longer that. Now they're just somebody out there that instead of all the news that's fit to print, now it's all the news that terrorists need to read so they can escape detection from America. I personally think...
See, I told you people, Republicans, love to bash the New York Times. Mike is just relishing it. You can just see he's in his element here.
Okay,
keep bashing, by all means. Destroy the gray lady.
Now that I've done it, well, the gray lady, you know, she's got no clothes. That's the problem. Now that I've said that, the fact of the matter is the anger might be initially directed in the direction of the Times because they are the ones who published it, but that's what the New York Times does. The anger and the effort ought to be aimed at finding the people who leaked the classified information to the Times. You know, continuing to bash the Times may play for good headlines, and it may engage the Times in a helpless defense of themselves, but we really need to find out who leaked the information and prosecute them. That's the key.
Let me take what you're saying step by step, because you raise a lot of points. I want to respond to each one of them. One of them, as you know, the day the New York Times published that article, another newspaper, one that I guess is just as despicable as the New York Times, called The Wall Street Journal, you may have heard of it, did the exact same thing, published an article saying the exact same thing, but I don't hear Republicans bashing The Wall Street Journal. Oh, that's right, their editorial page supports the president. I'm sure there's no connection whatsoever there. But just something more important here. I read that New York Times article. I don't think I learned anything that I didn't already know, expect that the administration was doing it. I was hoping they did it within the law. I didn't realize that they were doing everything outside the law. To me, that was quite a story. But the specific details of how it was done, to me, that's a distinction without a difference, because you don't hear Republicans saying, oh, no, you can't, you know, no, all of us agree, or should agree, that it's one thing to say what the president is doing and another thing to talk about how he's doing it. And they all agree with you. I don't think New York Times is doing this, but as a general purpose, you can say, yes, we're spying on the terrorists. That's fine with me. If you say Joe Agent living at 123 Main Street, Afghanistan is spying on the terrorists, that's a bad thing, and I'll be the first to condemn such a thing when it puts people's lives in danger. But it seemed to me that the condemnation of the New York Times was not, oh, that they told about this particular bank. I didn't read any specific banks in that article, by the way.
No, there were no banks in it. But what it was the clearinghouse, the particular financial agency, I believe in Denmark or wherever it was, that actually clears and reports and holds the records on all these transactions. That's the one they named. And with a little bit of research, you can find out which banks are subscribers or corresponding banks to that particular agency, and you just then go ahead and avoid those banks.
If you want to get into an issue of whether or not a specific clearinghouse should have been named, I might well agree with you. But to me, there's a broader issue here, because the New York Times was condemned when we found out they were spying on 225 million Americans. That's you and me and you and everyone who doesn't use Quest, which apparently was the only company that turned them down. I thought of switching to Quest, but I don't have one in the Washington, D.C. area purposely, just so I wouldn't be monitored. But that's what the anger was about. I mean, again, I can agree with you on the specifics, you know, of that clearinghouse, though I suspect the terrorists know that we're doing that kind of thing.
They do. And in fact, the New York Times itself, Mark, as you recall, either back in late 03 or early 04, in the wake of what happened on September 11th, 2003, the New York Times themselves editorialized and said, we hope the administration will develop a program to track all the banking transactions and do something to stop terrorists from moving money around the way they've been doing it. So what the administration did was exactly what the New York Times asked them to do in an editorial, and then the New York Times acts like this is great news.
There's a difference, Mike. They did it outside the law, all right? I have no problem tracking terrorists, but we have this whole legal concept in place. It's called probable cause. You go to a court, you get a search warrant, you say, this guy is a terrorist, therefore we need to track him. The court issues a warrant. It can be a secret court if you want under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. They issue the warrant, you track the guy, you track his associates, it's all done within the law. If that law wasn't sufficient, they go to Congress, they get a law that authorizes it. What they did is they went outside the law. And I would venture to guess the New York Times would not be so quick to publicize something that was done within the law. As you know, when they spied on 220 million Americans, the New York Times held that data for a year, and now I'll condemn the gray lady for holding that data for a year. When the president breaks the law to spy on Americans, as they did in East Germany and the Soviet Union, I don't think you ought to wait a year. I think you ought to tell us right away. Why not do it within the law?
Well, I'm waiting to see what the court will say on the phone data, the listening, the warrantless wiretapping. I still think there's a strong argument to be made. The court is going to side with the president on that. But
after Hamdan v. Rumsfeld, I want to get to that, because I think there's not a chance unless Justice Stevens, please live long, Justice Stevens, unless this 86-year-old man dies and the Republicans dance on his grave, I guarantee you the exact same ruling they did in Hamdan v. Rumsfeld, which is the president has to go according to the law. He can't just make up this concept.
Well, it's always possible the Supreme Court can get another one wrong the way they did in Hamdan, but we'll wait to see what they do on that and examine what their ruling is at the time, and we can debate Hamdan, and I'll tell you exactly exactly why Justice Stevens got that one exactly wrong.
We'll get to that.
But getting back to the financial monitoring of the transactions, even the New York Times, I mean, you can make an argument, and you and I have argued back and forth, and there are a lot of people on both sides with goodwill who will argue that maybe the president had the authority, maybe he didn't on the warrantless wiretapping. But even the New York Times in their article said there didn't appear to be anything illegal about what he was doing on the monitoring of the financial transactions. They indicated that it had had some success, not as much as the administration had hoped. The administration did show them a couple successes that they'd had on it. But the Times did not allege that it was illegal. They said it appeared that maybe it was legal, and they just thought that this was something that was important enough that the people needed to know about it.
But here's the thing. When the New York Times disclosed that 220 million of us, three-quarters of us, you and me and you, all of us have our phone records monitored by the government, knowing every person we've talked to, every private conversation, every person who we've ever talked to in our lives, they got it. They've had it since September 11th, okay? That was understood by every legal scholar that I've ever talked to. It's to be illegal. It's a direct violation of the Telephone Act of 1933. His name escapes me right at the moment. But the one...
I'll take your word on that one.
No, no, no. It's on my website. I'll look it up in the
All
break.
Right.
But the thing is that I think the Republicans were waiting. And then when the New York Times did the financial disclosures, out came the bashing, and really the anger is not so much about that. The anger is disclosing that the president was breaking the law and breaking the law by spying on Americans. And that's something where, again, if it's warranted, get a warrant under current law. If current law doesn't allow every one of us to be spied on, doesn't allow them to implant a chip and watch everywhere we go, and the president insists we need to implant a chip and watch where everyone goes, and the American people agree with it and they pass a law, I'll be against the law, but it will be legal. The problem is the president is going outside the law, and I got to tell you, even your Republican friends are saying some of this. We have Pete Hoekstra, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. The House Intelligence Committee. No shrieking violent Pete Hoekstra.
No, Pete's
strong
a good guy.
Strong Republican, conservative Republican.
Congressman Hoekstra's a good guy.
And he's complaining the administration did not brief him about these programs. He wrote to the Bush administration, it may represent a breach of responsibility by the administration, a violation of law, and a direct affront to me and to the members of this committee. Now, the president isn't telling the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He's not telling you and me. He's not telling the courts. If a Democratic president were doing this, you'd be the first to call him tyrannical. How can you allow the president to go outside the law like this?
Well, first of all, it's not clear, and Congressman Hoekstra doesn't allege that the briefings on various programs that were due the House Intelligence Committee and the congressional leadership, both intelligence committees and the congressional leadership. He doesn't allege that they were withheld intentionally. He doesn't say that it was an oversight. He just says that it's come to his attention that there were some programs that should have been briefed to the Congress that hadn't been done so, and he takes the administration to task for their neglect in not doing that.
And he only learned about it through government tipsters. If the New York Times hadn't published it, our members at Congress would not know enough to oversee the practice.
You know, I have the advantage of having seen Congressman Hoekstra yesterday on TV when he was talking about this particular program. He was on a channel that you don't watch very much, I'm sure, Fox News.
Oh, the Republican propaganda channel.
Well,
I watch it every now and then to laugh to see what the administration is doing.
He was on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, and he told Chris Wallace yesterday that these were not programs that he learned about through the New York Times. These were additional programs that, yes, he got through people in the government.
In the press.
Who tipped him off.
Right.
And that he had...
Whistleblowers, the kind that are punished by this administration.
He had taken the administration to task. He had demanded the proper notification and briefings. The administration had been forthcoming and given him and his colleagues the proper notification and briefings. And Congressman Hoekstra declared himself satisfied with the issue.
So this is the president's policy, okay? We're not going to tell Congress. We're not going to tell the courts. We're not going to tell the American people. We're going to do what we want, whether it's within the law or not. And if you find out about it, well, then we'll let you know what we're doing. But if you don't, in the meantime, we're going to do what you did. We're going to punish the leakers who told you that we were breaking the law. You support this kind of government?
No. The people who mentioned it to Congressman Hoekstra, I don't think that's worth pursuing. The people who released it to the New York Times.
Why not? That's leaking. That's whistleblowing. Why can't we go after them?
Clearly they have broken the law. The extent of the damage that they've created is significantly less because nothing got into the public domain. If they were found out And if they were prosecuted, it would be fine with me because nobody should leak classified information at any time. But the people who give it to the New York Times, those are the people who ought to be investigated, prosecuted, and put in jail.
35 years ago, someone in the defense, I'm not sure we know today, leaked the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times.
Wasn't it Ellsworth?
It may have been.
I think it was Dan Ellsworth.
Going to
or Ellsberg, whatever Ellsberg. His name is. Right. Ell somebody.
Nixon broke into a psychiatrist's office to find out who it was, leaked the Pentagon Papers, and we found out that our presidents, our administrations, Democrat and Republican, had lied to the American people to get us into the Vietnam War. And they found it out, and the proof was there. And I suggest that when the president is lying to get us into war, the American people need to know it, and the whistleblowers should not be prosecuted. But hold your point on that for a second.
Right.
We got to go to a break. Folks, if you want to join in the debate, you are welcome and encouraged to do so. Disagree with me. Disagree with Mike. Bring your own opinion. All you have to do is call 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister, studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last call.
Oh, no, mister, stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetener.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm debating the issues of the day with Mike Lane, the president of IntelliFint Strategies, and with you. If you want to join in the debate, just pick up the phone, dial 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And we're talking about the Republican bashing of the New York Times and whether it's justified or not. And overall, the question of the president's policy, the one where he spies on all of us. Part of the problem with collecting all this personal data about you and me and the people listening in, after all, 3/4 of Americans have their data collected now by the president, is that it's often misused. And I'm not saying that the government intentionally misuses the data, at least not most of the time, but we've seen where 26.5 million names of veterans mm-hmm. were posted on the Internet. We have 100,000 Social Security numbers of all the airmen who've flown in the last 20 years. We have 28,000 workers, people who worked for the Navy, and 38,000 FBI employees whose names and passwords were posted when someone broke into their system. Just by collecting this data on all these innocent people, and I don't think even you would accuse 225 million Americans of being terrorists.
Probably not.
I would hope not. I would hope not. Just collecting this data poses a huge risk. In this age of identity theft, in this age of phishing, phishing, when people take people's identity and try to trick them into all mm-hmm. kinds of things. Look, if the president wants to spy on 225 million Americans, I'm dead set against it. I will fight him in Congress. But if Congress passes a law and you folks agree that the president can spy on you, then you know what? It's the law, and I will respect it until I can get it changed. The president didn't want to go through the law, though, and that's why he did it all in secret. And that, to me, is what the New York Times exposed, first of all, and what caused people to be so...
Well, let's talk first about the risks of collecting this data. And yes, there are risks. Now, the president will assure us that the government has safeguards in place, that they're not going to misuse it. I'm an inherent distruster of government, and I always have a very, very uneasy, queasy feeling about that kind of thing. But the examples that you just gave were complete and total mishandling of the data, where people take confidential, sensitive data about people that can be used for wrong purposes, evil purposes, not necessarily murder and mayhem, but, you know, identity theft, things like that, and they've been able to acquire it from the government. One fact we have to know, the government's never cutting edge on anything, and certainly computer security is one of the things that they could learn a lot about, and they ought to learn a lot about it, and they ought to learn it quickly, and there's absolutely no excuse why they didn't learn computer security 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. They need to do it, and they need to do it tonight or tomorrow morning at the latest.
Isn't there an inherent problem when you have data on 225 million Americans, three-quarters of us, that somebody, somewhere, when you got that much data in the system, is going to misuse it? I mean, why not just focus, hey, on the terrorists?
Well,
call me crazy.
The good news is that the data on the overseas phone calls is not the stuff that was stolen. That's the stuff that's with the National Security Agency. They at least have learned
it's
encryption.
Not just
they
phone
have
calls.
Just
they have
the financial transactions, etc.
It's domestic
that's
phone
the kind
calls
of thing.
Too. You know that it's every phone call anyone in America, except those that were on Quest. Made since September 11th, 2001.
Well, the good news is they probably have the Quest data too. It's just that they didn't get it from Quest. Mark, you talk about the
good news.
That's the good news. Yes.
I thought when we attacked the Soviet Union, we didn't like this kind of stuff. I thought when we attacked East Germany, we didn't like
this kind of stuff. Because the Soviets misused it to persecute their own people. There's no evidence that the United States is using this to persecute its own people.
We're spying on Quakers in Vermont. I think that's pretty bad.
I admit there's a danger in this, but there's probably an enhanced danger from not collecting this kind of information.
It's
not all good. It's double-edged sword.
Okay, fine.
It's a double-edged sword.
You support the policy.
The
I don't support the policy. We can argue about the merits of the policy. Why can't the president go to the American people, argue the merits of the policy? Democrats like me say this is ridiculous. Argue it out. Have a law signed by Congress. And then at least, while I will hate the policy, I'll admit that it is a legal policy. Why can't they go through the Constitution and the rule of law?
Well, there will come a time in the next year to two when this whole issue finishes winding its way through the courts, and the court will rule as to whether or not the president has the inherent constitutional authority as commander-in-chief to do these things.
So act first, find out legality later.
Should the court find that he doesn't have it, then I'm sure there will be a tremendous effort, no matter who's president at that time, to work with the Congress to develop the legal authority, if indeed the court finds that the president doesn't have it, which I believe they will.
So the president can do whatever he wants, and then he should check for legality after he spied on 225 million Americans.
As you know, the president has a lot of high-priced legal authority, including the entire Justice Department.
And they told him he couldn't do it.
No, the Justice Department told him he could do it.
And those that said he couldn't do it were fired. Let me go to Kenneth from Alexandria. Kenneth, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks. Hey, Mark, I just wanted to say good job at giving these guys no quarter, because I watch your style and I watch you on TV, and when the Republicans or conservatives try to talk their way out of positions, you do a really good job of trying to narrow it down to what matters. So I just wanted to say that. Now, the other thing I wanted to say is, I just want to ask your guest a pointed question, which is, if listening to these phone calls was such a good idea and so crucial to the war on terror, why didn't they just go to the FISA and get the warrant? The reason I wanted to put that question pointed is because, as you and Mark are talking, there's a lot of information going by, and so you never really get a chance to answer that question. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity.
Ken, I think it's...
Without Mark talking to
you. I will talk. Ken, I think it's a great question.
Answer the question.
Great question, Mike. Answer the question.
Ken, the FISA is not the all to end all. In fact, there is some evidence that the FISA, as streamlined and as quick a court as it is, does have some bureaucratic inertia in it that doesn't allow for collection of real-time information as it's happening. Sometimes a three-hour or a three-day delay, and FISA acts on most things, 99% of things within 3 days, sometimes that delay can be absolutely critical in terms of doing the things that you need to do and collecting the kind of information that you need to collect. Can you imagine maybe if we had stumbled upon concrete information about what was going to happen on 9/11 on September 9th, But yet, and that didn't happen. We know that. But we were not able to listen in on the phone calls because it took us 3 days to go to the FISA court and get the warrant for the listening. And therefore, we lost the World Trade Center just because of that short but lengthy delay when you're talking about things that might impact the citizens.
Let me respond because we got another caller, but I need to respond to a bunch of things you said. Number one, as you know, you can go and tap someone's phone call for 72 hours for 3 days, but without FISA court, according to the law, according to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, you can go ahead and do that. You apply to the court at the same time as you begin tapping. You don't have to wait. You don't have to wait 1 second. You can begin tapping, and then you apply to the court. And the only reason you have to stop is if the court, after 3 days, tells you no. They don't tell you no, you keep going. That's current law. If the president doesn't like current law for some reason, he can work to change current law. But my understanding is actually we did have data that wasn't translated on September 10th to suggest that something was going to happen. But if the court isn't working, and every indication I have is it is working, isn't working, go to Congress and change the law. I got another caller. Ken has one more comment. Make it quick, and then I got to get to Edward from Vienna. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, hold on. Say hello, Mark. Hello.
Go ahead.
I was trying to get something. Anyway, what it sounds like, what it boils down to, what you're saying is.
Sounds like, Ken, you're busy with a child.
Yeah, sorry
fine.
About that. Okay,
actually, I'm
going
to go on to my next caller, if you don't mind, Ken. Let's go on to Edward from Vienna. Edward, welcome to the Inside Scoop. I got to change the phones. Got to get to Edward from Vienna. So, Edward, just begin talking as soon as you hear my voice. As soon as he hears his own voice. We will get to Edward from Vienna. He will come in just a moment.
I'm on the line.
Go ahead, Edward.
Yeah, well, I'm listening to this debate going on here. It's kind of interesting because your gentleman there, your guest, really can't explain why the executive branch does what they do. But I have the answer. You know, there used to be a saying once in the United States that the cabos only speak to the lodges, and the lodges only speak to God. Well, this is the situation we're in. We have a president who gets his directions from God. He's publicly stated that. Therefore, that puts him above the law. It puts him above everything. How do we go about this? And I mean, that's the problem here.
Edward, I don't think the president has ever indicated that he is above the law. In fact, he would tell you that we're a nation of laws and he follows the law.
No, he does this every time when he signs a bill, when he says it doesn't apply to him.
Yeah,
he's done it over 700 times already. He signed 700 things where he has said this does not apply to him.
Edward makes a very good point with signing statements. The president hasn't said he's above the law. He said, in the words of Louis XIV, the state, it's me, l'état c'est moi. I am the law. He can do whatever he wants. The president loves torture. We know that. John McCain passed a bill. He does. He insists on his right to torture anybody at any time. Vice President Cheney begged Congress, don't pass a law prohibiting our right to torture. We need to torture. Torturing is essential to the war on terrorism. John McCain, to his credit, and a great bipartisan majority of Republicans and Democrats, passed a law. And the law said, Mr. President, you can't torture. And as he signed that, he did a signing statement saying, nice law, this doesn't apply to me.
Well, not quite. What he does when he does a signing statement is what presidents before him have done. And that is saying, as I sign this, I interpret certain provisions of this to mean this. And he's explaining the way he's interpreting them.
Right. I interpret this torture law not to apply to anything I do.
And if anybody in Congress or any citizen or anything has a problem with that, they can certainly litigate that and get the court to instruct the administration that they have interpreted it wrong. You know, our judicial record is replete with parts of the administration, be they agencies or the White House or whatever, who have done things contrary to what Congress intended, and the courts interpret it and say, no, the Congress intended this.
Come on.
Anybody can sue on that.
Come on. There are laws that are ambiguous.
We all have standing on that.
Mike, there are laws that are ambiguous. There are laws where it says, you know, you have to protect children from certain kinds of toys, and you have to make the eyes small enough that it can't choke a child. And the president says, I interpreted that to mean 2 inches rather than 3 inches. That's fine. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a law that says you can't torture people, and the president's saying, I don't have to abide by that law. His exception trumped this whole statute that he fought hard not to pass in the first place.
Well, I don't think it was quite as flagrant as you're saying it was, and furthermore, There were, why has Senator McCain not gone to either the media or the courts or both or the people and campaigned on this particular issue?
Because Senator McCain wants a Republican nomination in 2008.
Sold out, has he?
Yes, I think he has. He's speaking it before Jerry Falwell. He certainly was. Edward, go ahead, make your last point.
He's done this more than any other president in history.
Yes, he has. And, I admit that.
Yes, and it's by a factor of more than 10 or 20 times.
I know it's
so
more than all
So this tells us something. Yes, l'état c'est moi. He's trying to be like Louis the Sun God.
And
you know what happened to Louis the Sun God?
I want you to know that's the most French I've ever used here on the Inside Scoop. Thank you very much for your call. I always appreciate when you do call.
Let me make one more comment on the signing statements. And I agree that the president has used signing statements more than the entire history of the president. What this means is that he's equally as good a communicator as Ronald Reagan, if not better. He's making clear and communicating to both the Congress and the American people how he views these things and how he's going to enforce it. None of these things are secret. They're all public information. You can go on to thewhitehouse.gov and download them and read them.
He's trying to protect himself from impeachment. Mike, look, can we agree on something? There's a difference between an ambiguity in the law where the president decides, as he does with all manner of regulatory agencies, to interpret the law, which he's allowed to do within the confines. And then there are laws that are unambiguous, that there's really no room for argument. Can we just, as a general purpose, agree that signing statements are proper when the law is ambiguous, but not proper when the law is clear?
No, a signing statement is proper anytime, because anytime Congress passes a law, they always have a committee report that accompanies it, elaborating and explaining and things like that. So a signing statement will always be appropriate.
Congress wrote the law. They have the right to interpret the law they wrote.
Well, actually, they don't. It's the courts that interpret the law that Congress wrote. That's why we have our three-period government.
That's true, but they put committee reports, which we know in Hamdan v. Rumsfeld, for example, they cited the actual committee reports at the time we passed the Geneva Conventions to argue that, guess what, the president has to follow the Geneva Conventions.
Yes, and in this particular case, the court did get it wrong, yes.
Folks, if you want to join in the discussion, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can agree with Edward, Ken, me, or Mike, or have your own view. Just give us a call. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
Okay, hon.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now.
What kind of man are you?
Father!
Look here, my father was a father, and he smoked his brains out in the house.
Watch as he blows those smoke rings on my little red face.
You probably have asthma.
Asthma? Schlasma. I'm telling you, nothing's going to happen to your kids.
Don't swear when you're lying. You know very well that thousands of kids get bronchitis, ear infections, and even pneumonia from their parents' cigarette smoke. And didn't you promise your little angels you'd smoke outside?
Hey, Daddy.
Those little devils are just so sweet.
Do the right thing.
Please, smoke outside.
Until you can stop, go out for your kids.
Take the pledge. Call 1-800-513-1157.
A rite of passage, a challenge to join the elite, and if you succeed, if you can master your fear, outsmart your enemy, and never yield even to yourself, you will be changed forever. The few, the proud, the Marines.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
And Edward, I thought those were great calls. Mike may not have agreed.
No, I thought they were wonderful.
We always appreciate it. And folks, if you disagree with me, you're welcome to call in as well, obviously, 888-488-MARK. Here's my problem when the president doesn't do things according to the book. And, of course, my book is my pocket constitution, which I carry with me wherever I go. But the problem is, I would argue, we actually fight worse in the war on terror when we don't go by the book. And I'll give you some examples. I think if we had done everything according to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, according to the courts, according to Congress, telling the intelligence committees what was going on, having them authorize it, first of all, I don't think the press would have been that likely to tell us all about it. If the government's working the way it is, then you don't need to have people in government say, New York Times, I got to tell you something, you know, this government's out of whack. You don't have whistleblowers. Let me give you some other examples of why I don't think it's working. One example is Carla Martin. I don't know if you remember who she was. In the Massawi trial, you had a woman, she meant her best, working for the government. And what did she do?
She was the prosecutor, right?
She was working for the prosecution team. She actually wasn't the prosecution. She was working for their team. And the prosecution knew better. Actually, they were lawyers. And what she did is she coached all her witnesses. She told them exactly what the other witnesses said and how they could meld their stories to make them all work together. Mm-hmm. And the judge appropriately threw the book at her and almost got Massawi off.
Almost a mistrial.
Now, Carla Martin thought she was doing the right thing. But actually, had she just worked within the system, it would have happened the same way it happened. And we can argue whether it was a just result or not, but we can all agree it was a just due process. And no one can argue that Massawi didn't get a fair trial. It seems to me that we have other things. Bush has talked about closing Guantanamo Bay. Now, to me, that's an overreaction the other way. We may very well need Guantanamo Bay. But what I'm saying is what the Supreme Court is saying, try these people according to the book. Try them according to the Geneva Conventions, a treaty we've already done. You don't have to close the thing. One article I read just today said the CIA has stopped their interrogations entirely because they don't know who to believe. Do they believe Congress, which prohibited torture? Do they believe the president's signing statement? Now they're not interrogating anyone, which is too much in the other direction. My argument is when the president goes by the book, we know exactly what's allowed and what's not allowed. We can all work together as one country. What's wrong with that?
Well, as you know, I think the Supreme Court got it terribly wrong in this latest decision as to what parts of U.S. law apply to the enemy combatants in Guantanamo, as well as what parts of the Geneva Convention might apply to the enemy combatants in Guantanamo. I don't believe any of it applies. They are flagrant violators of the Geneva Convention. They are entitled to none of the protections under the Geneva Convention.
Article 3 of the Geneva Convention applies to everybody.
The Supreme Court just flat out got it wrong.
No, the common law of Article 3, I've read that 185-page opinion, so let me tell you. Right. Article 3 applies to anyone. The whole purpose of this article, the Geneva Conventions, mm-hmm. was actually to protect people like the Jews that were shipped to concentration camps in World War II who were not combatants at all. The idea is every citizen, every human being has certain basic rights. And what the Geneva Convention says in Article 3, and it's totally not about prisoners of war, not about wearing uniform, it says that if you're going to be tried for a crime, it has to be through regular courts. You can't set up a kangaroo court of the president's choosing. It has to be through regular courts.
Well, first of all, military tribunals are not kangaroo courts. In fact, they have a fairly good track record in the United States of being very fair and treating...
Court-martials are fair, and we have court-martials, and the Supreme Court said court-martials are fine.
But for our own people, but you can't court-martial an enemy combatant. They're not subject to the authority of the Uniform Code of Military Justice because they're not our soldiers.
According to the Supreme Court opinion, you can have military commissions that have the same rules as a court-martial, and that's a fair way to go about it. It's apparently how he went about it in World War II, mm-hmm. how he went about it in prior wars. And they said these are regularly constituted tribunals. You can do it that way. Right. But you can't just make up one on your own. What's wrong with that?
Notwithstanding the fact that you and I will disagree, and I will forever tell you the court got this one wrong, the administration has accepted the fact that the court has ruled. They didn't say, what was that president that was all offended at Chief
Andrew
Justice?
Jackson.
Andrew Jackson, who said...
Chief Justice Marshall, when he ordered him to stop persecuting the Indians, he's made his order, now let him try to enforce it.
Right,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes,
the president did not say that.
President Andrew Jackson.
The president said, the Supreme Court has spoken. There's no court to which you appeal higher than that. And they're working with the Congress now to expeditiously put in place the congressional authority for the rules for the military tribunals, which is what Justice Stevens said they needed to have. It remains to be seen how long that takes. I suspect it'll be done in fairly short order. It'll be done in this Congress. It will not be done, next year. It'll be done before Congress adjourns.
We'll see. Apparently, Karl Rove wants to make it a big political issue, which I think is...
Well,
but look, isn't this something that we as a country can come together on? I mean, it seems to me the Republicans are always trying to make political issues out of everything.
It's an election season, Mark. What do you expect?
Well, if the president on September 11th, 2001, or September 12th, when all of Congress was getting together singing mm-hmm. God Bless America and Tom Daschle said, we'll do whatever we can to help you, if they'd worked at that time to try to balance between civil liberties and attacking the terrorists, as I got to say, we did with the original version of the Patriot Act. I got to be proud of the House Judiciary Committee, everyone from Jim Sensenbrenner, the chairman, to liberals like Barney Frank and Maxine Waters, to conservatives like Lamar Smith, got together, and we agreed on the appropriate balance, which the administration promptly threw in the trash and put in their own, and that became the Patriot Act. But Congress can work together under adversity and balance these things, and the public can speak, and then we know it's by the book. It's a democracy. This president, whether we're talking about military tribunals, throwing someone in jail without a trial, torture, even shipping someone abroad, and I'm going to talk about what happened in Italy in just a minute, shipping someone abroad to be tortured, spying on Americans, whatever it is, his view is act first, worry about the legality later. Isn't that his policy?
That's not the policy. For everything that he's done, he has a legal opinion that authorizes it and gives an opinion that what he's doing is legal. These opinions
Saddam Hussein did too.
These opinions
Kim Jong-il
come from,
does too.
Well, I don't think you can compare our Justice Department to Saddam Hussein.
Sure,
that's not fair. No,
sure,
you can't.
Sure, you can, because they're his hacks. When the Justice Department said, I'll give you a clear example. They said that when Georgists wanted to impose a poll tax to actually make people in that state pay in order to vote for their ID cards, the Justice Department said, you know what? That's an express violation of a constitutional amendment. You can't do that. What did they do? The president's men overruled him and said, you find someone who will write me a legal opinion that says it's legal. They searched everywhere to find the lawyer that they could be basically a prostitute to say whatever he wanted him to say. He wrote that thing and he overruled the Justice Department. This is a president who decides what legal opinion he wants and then says, find me a lawyer to give me that opinion.
Well, in this case, the lawyer happened to be the Justice Department and happened to be the White House counsel. Now, granted, yes, they work for the president.
And they're fired if they disagree.
But the example you just gave was an example that showed the Justice Department did not want to go along with something that they thought was not legal. So therefore, we have the precedent now that the Justice Department's legal opinion is worth something.
They were overruled. And the Justice Department eventually said, it's okay, go ahead, Georgia, even though all of their staff lawyers, to a one, said it was illegal. But the Attorney General overruled them, so I guess his opinion is what matters.
Well,
this is not a president. Let me give you an example from the past. This is I remember when Ronald Reagan invaded Grenada, and I won't mention my source, but I know someone who was working for the legal affairs of the State Department at the time. Here's what he said. He said, we have invaded Grenada. Quick, find me the legal justification for it. The troops are on the ground, and it was his job to search, and he found an ancient treaty dusted off, the Eastern Caribbean Nations Treaty that no one had noticed before. He said, there's your legal justification. The president said, great, because we had already invaded.
Well,
that is what this president's doing,
no.
Acting first and then making up legal justification.
Let's go back to Grenada. The president, as commander-in-chief, is sworn to protect the safety and security of Americans. In the case you just cited, and we'll go back 25 years on that, the case you just cited was a case where lives, safety, and security of Americans in Grenada were being threatened as they were attending medical school down on that wonderful island. Let's go on vacation. So the president, exercising his inherent authority as commander-in-chief, sent the troops in to rescue those particular Americans, and notwithstanding whatever treaty they may have found in the basement, he had the authority in the Constitution to do that.
And what lives are in danger when the president decided that people already in jail, already in Guantanamo Bay or Jose Padilla, already in a U.S. brig, could not be charged under the law, could not have an attorney, could not be tried? The guy's already in prison. Why can't we try him? Why can't, at least in that case, he make sure he's acting according to the law before he acts?
Well, Padilla may indeed get his day in court. He will get his day in court.
He's an American citizen.
Padilla will get his day in court. The guys in Guantanamo should not have their day in court, not in an American court anyway. They can have it in the military tribunal or in a court-martial or something like that. But they're not entitled to their day in American court. These people are really bad people. They're bad guys.
And some of them are.
Who was the guy? Hamden, the guy who was the test case, the guy who brought the suit? What was he? He was Osama bin Laden's driver and personal bodyguard.
So try him.
Why is that guy even
try
allowed?
Try him. Why is he allowed to have a trial?
Why is he?
We tried Timothy McVeigh, a mass murderer.
He was
why
an American.
Why did we try him?
He was an American. And he was an American who was due to
we
process.
We tried the Nuremberg trials for the Nazis. They weren't Americans.
We can keep this
we
guy Hamden.
Trials.
In as long as we're fighting Osama bin Laden and his organization, we can keep his personal bodyguard and driver in jail.
Hamden is guilty.
He is.
Put forward the evidence. Try him. Execute him for all I care. But you got to have
No, he's probably got some good information. We don't execute
888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can join in the debate. We'll be right back after this.
If you're concerned that we're becoming a nation whose policies are grounded in beliefs that are centered on a lie and embedded in BS, then you won't want to miss the all-new program coming to Cox Channel 10, Escape from Orwellian Nation. Uncle Sam wants you to watch. Coming this summer. History has demonstrated that violence only begets greater violence. And injustice only begets greater injustice. This is not the tradition of our great nation. This is not how we want the United States to be known around the world. We have another tradition that we think ought to prevail. One that is more just and more powerful. There is a better way. If we truly want peace and security, then we must work hard for justice. In 2004, there were 203 million eligible voters in the United States. Of these, nearly 70% did not vote for George W. Bush. Only 62 million voters, or barely 30% of those eligible, actually voted for the president in 2004. Recent polls show the president's approval ratings slipping into the low 30% range. This comes as a little surprise to many of the 70% of eligible voters who did not vote for him.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We've enjoyed your calls at 888-488-MARK, and a lot of you have written on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. Some of you would rather write than call, and we always appreciate when you do. And, of course, it's right there at RadioInsideScoop.com. And there's Robert writes, I think this is Robert, yes, a number of questions, talking about the fact that we captured terrorists that were planning in the New York tunnel, but that others have captured terrorists too. Canada, in fact, has captured terrorists without having to spy on all its citizens. Syria has captured terrorists. They probably were spying on all their citizens. But it seems to me that, I mean, then those people in Chicago that apparently, you know, didn't even really know where the Sears Tower was, but this was this great, great thing that the administration captured.
It goes to, you got to be careful what you joke about.
Do we really need to spy on 225 million Americans in order to capture terrorists? Canada did it.
First of all, we don't know what Canada did and didn't do. We don't know what classified programs
they
have in
place.
They
follow the law, unlike we.
We don't know what classified programs they have in place that they, well, maybe they can do it.
I respect Canada too much.
Maybe they can do it. We don't know what they've done. And remember, they have a new conservative prime minister up there now.
So maybe they'll join the Bush administration in breaking the law.
Mexico elected the conservative candidate there. It's a North American sweep.
Mexico's not decided yet. Do you think they should count every vote in Mexico? And count every vote?
I think they should count every vote in every election, and I'm
glad to hear
I'm unclear as to what they've done in Mexico.
In 2000, Al Gore would be president if they'd followed.
No, actually, they counted every vote down there. The New York Times and the Washington Post put together a consortium, and they said Bush won.
No, they said Gore would have won under any system where you count all the votes.
No,
if you
they said,
believe me, check your friend Matt Drudge.
I'm pretty sure they said that Bush would have won by 500-some-odd votes, more than he won by.
They said Bush would have won if you don't count all the votes.
We'll go back and count them.
Okay.
All right.
We can argue this next week. There's more that Robert points out. He gives a very long point about George Bush saying he would fire anyone who leaked Valerie Plame's identity. Well, an article in the National Journal that I have on my website in the comments section points out Bush authorized, not necessarily the Valerie Plame leak, but authorized the whole smear campaign against Joe Wilson. It came out now to virtually no press. How can he then say that he's going to fire anyone that leaks the information? We now know Rove did it. Rove's still working for him. Why is that?
Well, I don't think it was a smear campaign against Joe Wilson as much as it was. He had less than no credibility, and he was out there being afforded credibility by the New York Times, the Washington Post, and others. And the way to put it in perspective was to let people know exactly how he...
To show
where he had his biases, and, you know, he got into this whole thing.
Didn't he?
No, we don't know that he was accurate
or not. Saddam is saying, you're not saying he was seeking nuclear weapons from Niger now, are you?
The British...
The president has admitted that he lied to the American people about that.
No, he did not. The British still stand by their report that he was seeking Niger golden cake or something like that. No, the British still stand by that report.
Our intelligence has said that report is full of it. And they told the president that long before he told that to the American people.
But he didn't know that at the time.
Sure he did.
No, he didn't.
He knew that we were telling him, all right, next time I will bring you articles.
You just told me how dead wrong our intelligence community gets all these things, and now you're depending on the one thing they may have gotten right? Come on, we have
what
small
consistency
problem here.
What I'm saying is that the president decides what he wants to do, and then he manufactures the intelligence to support it no matter what the intelligence community says. He fixes the facts around the intelligence as the Downing memo said the president was doing.
Oh, the Downing memo.
The
you
other
know,
thing.
Let's
that
talk
this
about
president
some more discredited stuff that,
about.
You know.
Who discredits the Downing memo? The British admit it's accurate.
Nobody's ever come up with an original. It's all a retyped thing. It's
the
not
British
even a copy of the original.
Has the president ever said it's inaccurate?
No.
Has the vice president ever said it's inaccurate?
Not that I heard.
But here they say all these other things are inaccurate. Don't you think if there was a problem with the Downing memo, they might tell us?
It's not their memo. It's the British memo.
Uh-huh. All right.
They don't have any standing to talk about what's...
I want to move on about North Korea, because Robert and Vicky talk about North Korea on the blog. And Robert says Bush seems pretty laid back on North Korea. And I agree with Robert that we're being pretty laid back. Of course, Robert points out we haven't discovered oil in North Korea yet. Vicky takes the other view and says the technology for North Korea to launch missiles was made available by lax security controls during the Clinton administration. Vicky, during the Clinton administration, we were watching North Korea. We had literally cameras inside their nuclear installations. He didn't turn those off until under George Bush, and we were too busy going into Iraq, a country that didn't have nuclear weapons, while Kim Jong-il was developing them. Sounds to me like this is a president who claims to be working against weapons of mass destruction, but when a country actually develops them, he runs and hides.
Well, the temptation is to make some sort of joke about Kim Jong-il's mental health state, but I won't. Leaving that aside,
he's a dangerous man, and he's more dangerous than Saddam Hussein ever was.
And this is a guy who has reached agreements with four presidents and broken agreements with four presidents. He cheats, he slimes,
so
he does everything.
So why should he be punished?
He should be punished.
Okay,
now,
we agree on that. Why is Bush saying, I can't act unilaterally, I have to rely on the United Nations? He sounds like
actually,
a caricature of John Kerry.
Actually, not the UN.
Not the real John Kerry.
Actually, not the UN. He's talking about the six-party talks over in that area.
He's arguing about the shape of the table, and at the same time as they're developing weapons that can hit Japan and possibly eventually the Western United States.
We are engaging Korea in diplomatic discussions.
This is interesting. As the president
said,
I'm the hawk here and you're the dove.
No, I'm about to criticize the president. We are engaging them. We are letting diplomacy run its course. I have absolutely no expectation that diplomacy is going to get us any place with North Korea. I don't know what the president or the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Defense thinks, but ultimately we are going to wind up in a more confrontational situation with Korea than we are now, because I don't expect diplomacy to work. You got to give it a little time.
You want to hear my plan for dealing with North Korea?
Tell me.
I want you to know, I brought this up on the Inside Scoop more than 2 years ago.
All right.
And Mr. President, if you're listening in and you want to steal my plan and call it your own, you're welcome to it. Here's my plan. Number one, and I hope we've already done this. I don't know that we have. We secretly arm South Korea with nuclear missiles, tactical nuclear weapons. Get them armed and in place. Okay? Number two, we announce, after they're armed and ready to go, that they're there. And we give North Korea a face-saving measure. You get rid of yours, and we'll remove South Korea's, a la the Cuban Missile Crisis. Okay? That gives him a chance to back out. If he refuses to back out, then I'm willing to do a bombing of the Pyongyang nuclear plant. Just the plant, not a full-scale invasion of North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
But we do, in essence, what Israel did to the Assyriq nuclear plant in Iraq in 1982. Bomb it. And that should give a very clear message. And then again, we offer. You remove yours, and South Korea removes theirs. But to me, that's a very strong stance. Sure, we should get as much of the world's support as we can for it. But if we can't, I'm willing to act alone. That's pretty hawkish. You agree with me?
Very hawkish. And you surprised me with some of this, first time I've heard it. And let me ask you a question. Aren't we signatory to a non-proliferation treaty someplace that would prevent us from giving nuclear weapons to South Korea?
That's a good point.
Are we going to follow the law?
That's a good point. I'm always for following the law. And so I think we need to look at that treaty, look at it hard, and if it needs to be modified,
this is a worldwide treaty.
Well, you can back out of treaties. We've done it before.
Well,
if we have to. No, I agree we should follow the law.
I agree
we should follow the law. But it seems to me that when North Korea breaks the treaty by proliferating, and I think they're a signatory. Correct me if
they
I'm
are.
Wrong.
No, North Korea is a signatory, and that's another thing they've broken. They pledged to abide by it, and they broke it.
If you're a signatory to a treaty and you break it, I'd have to read that treaty, that you can take certain steps according to that treaty. Again, I agree with you. We should follow the law, look at the details of that treaty, and we should follow along with it. I agree with you.
And the second part of your suggestion depends really on the first piece, because unless you're prepared to play the nuclear card to defend South Korea, North Korea has a million people in uniform, and they're going to overwhelm the peninsula.
I know that.
So that's
why I mentioned that card
first. So
at least I thought it through, but I agree with you. We have to go by the law. I wish the president thought the way that you and I think. One more comment before we leave. I've got to talk about Ken Lay.
All right.
Because I think people of goodwill everywhere were very saddened by the death of Ken Lay. Not for the reasons you might suspect. We're saddened. I'm saddened. I'm a little angry that this guy isn't being punished, I have to admit. It's ironic because some people think the death penalty is the harshest punishment. I and millions of Americans wanted to see this guy rot in prison, this guy with all his fancy, the ice statues that have all kinds of stuff coming out of certain parts of their body, whatever it is. I wanted to see this guy go to jail. And even worse, according to the newspaper, and I sure hope they're wrong, but according to someone who studied this law, and it's not a law I'm familiar with, under the prevailing case law, I don't see any way they can proceed against Lay for restitution in the criminal case. What they're saying is if he dies, the shareholders lose their suit. The SEC finds a harder time going up against him. Basically, the rule is if you're convicted of a crime and it's up on appeal, the conviction goes away. Let me tell you something. I think that's soft on crime, and if that is the law, I want to change the law to say if you steal people's money, as they did that awful thing in California where millions of ordinary people just trying to pay their electric bills saw them triple, and all that money went to Ken Lay's pockets. If you do that kind of thing, your heirs don't get to keep the fruits of your criminal activity. All that belongs to the people of California. If that is the law, I want to work with Republicans to change the law.
We found agreement.
Ken
Lay is a bad guy. I don't know. He hadn't been through the entire criminal process, so perhaps criminally he can't be pursued for restitution, but I do hope that there's a civil provision someplace that will allow all the aggrieved parties to go after his estate, because you're 1,000% right. His heirs should not live off that ill-gotten largesse.
Absolutely not. One of these things said that the idea is that you're loath to punish dead people for their estates. I'm not loath to punish Ken Lay at all. This is Kenny boy. This is President Bush's main man, the guy who gave more money than anyone else to President Bush's campaign. I'm just sorry he died too soon. I wanted to see him
punished. It was the President's Justice Department that convicted him the first time and would have convicted him the second time.
Any Justice Department should convict a man like Ken Lay.
Agreed.
Listen, folks, if you like this show, call into our comment line. Just dial 571-749-1166. Hit option 3 and tell them you like the Inside Scoop and you want to see more of it, and maybe we'll be on twice a week. That's it for the Inside Scoop. I want to thank you, my guest, Mike Lane, what my favorite guest to have here on the show. And if you want to find out more about the Inside Scoop, just go to my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com. We don't have a television show every day of the week, but we're on the radio every day. Check it out. This is Mark Levine, signing off.